T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Here it comes. And a drive to left. Grand slam time.
Len Casper.
Cubs win.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, baby.
TV voice of the Cubs.
And one other question about Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Does he still qualify for the Wookiee of the Year?
Slightly above average bassist.
Len Casper playing a guitar, really into it.
Len Casper.
Cubs win.
With Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Len Casper is on Twitter, at Len Casper. Boy, has he had a couple of fun nights of baseball, and there are things in sports that are fun to call. A walk-off home run is certainly very high on that list, and it's rare to be able to do it in consecutive evenings. And the last time the Cubs did it, Len Casper wasn't on the call. So the first, it was a career first then. He's on Twitter. I mentioned at Len Casper, and he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. So that's pretty cool, Len.
Very cool. You know, when you blow a lead in a ninth, it doesn't always feel good, but then you win it in 11 and kind of makes it all worthwhile. And great for Jason Hayward, who's off to a terrific start. He didn't have a good game offensively last night until that final swing, but it's one of the fun things about baseball is that if you don't have a good night, you can end it with one good swing, and everybody feels really good about it.
We're looking at the defense over the last, or at least I was looking at the defense over the last couple of days, and it's been, Joey mentioned it after the game, they had a four-error game that they won. It's kind of bounced back and forth, but you know, a night like Anthony Rizzo had last night where he was terrific defensively and helped win a ball game. It was amazing to watch. How do you feel defensively about this club overall?
Well, my partner on television, Jim DeShays, said early in the game, this feels like the best defensive alignment on the infield, and it's hard to argue with it, with Contreras catching, Bodhi at third, Baez at short, Russell second, Rizzo at first. It's a pretty athletic group. Mm. Chris Bryant doesn't mind running around in the outfield. I think he's made significant improvement as a defender at third. But the fact that he can play left or right, I think, is really important. And now with Ben Zobrist out for we don't know how long on the restricted list, that versatility defensively, I think, really is going to help this group and going to help Joe when he wants to move the pieces around.
Addison Russell not in the lineup today, and I would think that he's not coming up. He's not a regular player at this point. He's not entitled to anything here. What do you think his usage is going to look like?
Yeah, I think that Joe will ease him in. As Theo mentioned yesterday, I think ideally they had pegged next week the road trip starting in Cincinnati for his return from a baseball perspective, but because of the Descalzo day-to-day situation and then Zobrist leaving the team for a bit, it just made sense to add an infielder to the mix. But it's crowded when everybody's healthy and available, and that's a good problem to have, and that's why Joe makes the big bucks to figure it all out.
How often – we're talking about Chris Bryant's, like, next phase of career, if it's different at all with Mullinahaw this morning. Is he a future outfielder to you, or is he a guy that will flip back and forth as long as Joe's the manager of this ball club, because that's kind of what he does?
I think he, as long as Joe is the manager for sure, and maybe well beyond that, I think he's a guy who will move around. He likes playing the outfield, but I do think he sees himself as a third baseman who can play the outfield. I remember during his MVP season, there were some people who said that's going to hurt his MVP candidacy, the fact that he moves around, that an MVP needs to play one position, and I totally disagreed. I said I think having the ability to go to other spots and help your team, not hurt your team defensively, is a big plus for him. So I think that it depends on whatever the situation is injury-wise, and with the roster, he could go out there and play two straight weeks in left and right and then come back and play third, or he can just play third exclusively. but it's a fun little game I have with him every spring training about March 20th. I say, are you going to play any outfield this spring? He's like, nah, I probably won't play there much this year. And then invariably he makes 25 starts in the corners in the outfield.
Connor brought this up earlier, that last night Anthony Rizzo was an MVP, and what he was doing defensively is something rare. You don't usually see a first baseman's defense really help you win a game in the way that his did last night with some really savvy stuff.
Yeah, the bunt play, it just felt like they were giving the Cubs an out based on where he was playing, and it's something he does a lot. He ends up 25 feet from home plate when that pitcher tries to lay down the bunt. So he gets the out there, and then the double play turn in extra innings. He's just thinking ahead. I noticed after the play he was chatting with Gary Cederstrom, I think kind of going through the rule book. You know, if I tag him and then step on the bag, do I still get two? But he had the base runner all screwed up. And it's really not the base runner's fault there. It's more on the batter runner. And John Birdie admitted after the game he kind of froze after he popped up the bunt. And when Rizzo saw that, he thought, I'm going to at least swap the base runners here. And he ended up getting both guys out. But if the batter runs hard in that spot, it really forces Anthony to probably catch the ball. Or if he lets it drop, they only get one out.
That's a great point. I know a lot of people had chimed in on the base runner making the mistake and not knowing what to do, but you got to look at it from the source. I mean, don't pop it up first and foremost, but you got to take off out of the box.
Yeah, you always, as a batter runner, you've got to force the defense to make a decision, and usually it's to get one. And I think what Birdie did is he allowed Rizzo a very good chance to get two, and I believe the runner was Herrera. What he should have done once the ball hit the grass is just take off for second. But he panicked, and you can understand why. You have a split-second decision to make. He's assuming Rizzo's going to make the catch. And so at that point, he's pretty much dead. And the best thing he can do at that point is get in a rundown, and you know, he put his arms up as if to say, I have no idea what just happened.
How do you read Joe Maddon's bullpen circle of trust at the moment? Because it's an ever-fluctuating thing, and I don't know the size of the circle right now, and perhaps it's all in the context of situation and matchup.
And I think availability, Dan. I think right now, as the Cubs are in a stretch of only one off day, I think in 27, starting last Friday, it comes down to these four guys are basically available, and these three I'd like to stay away from. So your circle of trust on any given day is who's available. So I think he will use just about everybody. But if you look at the roster, Brock, Kinsler, Cishek, they've all been in closing situations in the big leagues before. So you trust all of those guys. Carl Edwards has had two really good outings since he came back. And, you know, with Strope out, I think it does free Joe up to just kind of do whatever he wants and based on the matchups. And if he needs to use two or three guys to get the final three outs, he knows he can, and he's not going to hurt any feelings.
Do you expect the Iowa shuttle to get kicked up here then, just for without injury, but just to move some arms around and get fresh guys up? Is that a Tim Collins coming back? Is it a Dylan Maples coming back? Is that a possibility here?
Well, it could be. The only thing is you don't have a ton of guys who have options. You know, Randy Rosario was kind of that guy on the roster when the season started, and I expect him to kind of be back and forth. But there are a few guys where you can't, you know, send them down without exposing them to waivers. So I think it's pretty set at the moment, with maybe an exception being if there's an injury and there would be that shuttle. But I think right now the group you see is the group you're going to get.
How aggressive do you think they could be with adding an extra pitcher? I mean, with the way, you know, we just talk about Chris Bryant playing as much outfield as he has, you have Addison Russell who can slide in at short now too. Is that a Mark Zagunas just to space things out for an extra arm, or too early in the season to do that?
Are you saying just like swap out, like take a position player and,
yes,
and
sir.
Add another pitcher?
Yes, sir.
I think Joe likes having the extra guy on the bench, and really, I say extra, it's four. Extra used to mean five or six.
Yeah.
I think three on your bench is really pushing it, but you never know. I think Joe could make it work because of the versatility of the roster. I don't believe they're at that point yet, but over the course of the next 2 weeks with the lack of off days, and if they have a 16-inning game, that's probably what would force that issue.
I was listening to Ozzie Guillen on the way into work today on the Score in his regular appearance on Thursdays with Mully and Hahn. He was talking about Yu Darvish, and his thought was Ozzie thinks Darvish has just too big a menu here to make all the food the way he needs to make it here. Just cut it down. He said, go with a fastball and play something off the fastball. He says his stuff is just great, and stop messing around with all of these pitches. I would imagine against a lineup like this, Mel Wynn's howling out. Maybe it's just not terrible advice to strip it down, simplify things, and build back. Or is that just not who he is? It's a veteran pitcher set in his ways, and he does have a lot of really good pitches.
I think it's a little bit of both. And I think that they've talked to him internally about, you know, simplifying things, being a little more aggressive and not, you know, thinking about a lot of different things, not necessarily thinking totally about the scouting report. And just, you know, we saw in Miami, in his last start, right, that he, at the end, he started throwing 98, 99 miles an hour. And I think every once in a while, that is really, really effective. So, you know, his slider ends up being kind of the pitch that he really wants to use in big spots, and I understand that. You know, Chatwood has his cutter that he can throw for strikes. But it always comes back to fastball command, and whether that's the four-seamer or the two-seamer, I think Darvish probably has to throw it as much as he possibly can.
Len, I've only perused Sahadev Sharma's latest on The Athletic. You wrote about Chris Bryant using an axe bat. The piece came out right when we were starting the show, so I haven't gotten all the way through. Have you had conversations with either Bryant or anybody who's now using axe bats or flips back and forth? What do players tell you about him? I'm very interested in the, I don't know, I guess you'd call it technology.
I haven't yet. I think it's all about the grip, and it just is kind of more contoured to how your hand is supposed to grip the bat, and it makes a lot of sense. I think for the most part, it's just feel, and it's if the guy uses it and he has a little temporary success, he's going to stick with it. I think some guys swear by it. Others are a little leery just because they're not used to it. But I saw the quote from Anthony Iaposi, who's a big fan of it. Hmm. And my guess is more and more guys will use it as time moves along. And it's probably not a fad. I think it's something that will continue to grow in usage.
I'm fascinated by it. Sahadev did a really good job with it. And they talked about how this particular handle is modeled, customized for Chris Bryant by this company, that there's the Mookie Betts version and there's a George Springer version, and because of the size of his hands, you know, no two axe bats are the same because of where it's supposed to rest on your hand. And what Bryant said was, it means you have to swing the bat a certain way. And for certain shapes of swings and certain places you want the barrel, it may just work all together. Now, we talked a lot with Chris in spring training, and he talked about his back shoulder. He talked about how keeping that back elbow down and tight to his body and able to drive the ball. And I guess he's figured that this works hand in hand with that. He's found a nice marriage of a wand that helps him create the magic he wants to create.
It just makes so much sense in the world. Your grip, you know, the way your hands are situated on the bat, that should matter a lot. And you want a guy to be as comfortable as possible and feel like he's locked in. So, you know, I know in golf they've kind of worked on grips and all that sort of thing. It just makes sense that in baseball you would do it. Tennis. Maybe even hockey down the road, you're going to see guys, with a modified top end of the stick for grips. It just makes all the sense in the world.
Since we were talking about Anthony Rizzo's defense last night, I'd always been told, you know, 33 going on 34 here, so I didn't watch a whole lot of Keith Hernandez play, but I've been told that Hernandez was the defensive first baseman of his era, if not, well, probably not all time, but one of the guys up there. You have a best defensive first baseman, like locked away in your head from either when you were growing up or stories guys will tell you, or just from having called as many games as you have?
Well, Hernandez stands out for sure. And just in my experience, Derek Lee was just so solid. Great hands, really good thrower. He reminds me of the right-handed version of Anthony. You know, they are very, very similar. And in my time calling games, I would say Lee stands out. I know Mark Grace was considered one of the best in the business throughout the 90s as a Cub. Cubs have been pretty fortunate in that regard in having some really good defenders at first. And I'm with you, Bernsie. You said it earlier that you don't think of first baseman as having such an impact defensively. But a good one is someone that you end up maybe overlooking until he has a night like he did last night. how many balls does he dig out of the dirt from throws from the left side? I mean, Baez would probably have five or six more errors with an average to below average first baseman.
It isn't just that, too. When you some teams, depending on how they set up their cutoff system and how they align their cutoffs,
yeah.
If you get an athletic first baseman that is either able to get further out to receive a throw or is able to make that drop step and deliver a throw, there are so many aspects to that position that you might see in the back end of a play only if you're looking for it.
Yeah, and the other thing I like is when he holds base runners, and you don't always see it on television, but he plays off the bag. And I think there's a subtle thing that happens where a lot of base runners gauge their lead based on where the first baseman is, not necessarily where the bag is. And I think he catches a guy maybe taking an extra half step off the base, and then when Contreras fires down there, it gives him that extra mm-hmm. half second. So he's just really smart and savvy in that regard, that he's always thinking next level and trying to figure out a way to make it better. And even his base running, JD mentioned last week on the road trip, there was a bases loaded situation in extra innings, and Chris Bryant slid into second with two outs and was just forced to end the inning. And JD said, you know, the one play that you hear coaches talk about is literally running through the bag at second, even though you're going to be out once you get past the bag, but you can buy that run. Anthony did it a couple years ago, and JD said Brad Ausmus was the only other guy he saw try it.
Huh.
And I know that that is in the Cubs system in terms of reminding their base runners in a big spot to consider that play. Anthony Rizzo's already been there, done that, and I think that says a lot about him.
Before we let you go, does it feel weird to see Starlin Castro almost 30 years old?
Yes.
Yes.
Makes me feel real old. I'm a big fan of his. You know, he got here at such a young age, was not a finished product, certainly defensively, but there's some Javi Baez in him, or there's some Starlin in Javi Baez in terms of being able to expand the zone and make good, solid contact. And JD mentioned it last night, he might be an interesting launch angle project because he has been a big ground ball hitter throughout his career. But he is strong enough to hit the ball out of the ballpark, and that might be the next level for him as he gets into his 30s.
Do you know who his most statistically similar batter is?
Give me a hint, Era.
I will give you a hint that he is a relatively recent White Sox mainstay.
Wow. A relatively recent... Not Avisail Garcia.
No.
Okay.
A wiry build with some pop.
Oh.
Alexei Ramirez.
Oh, yeah. That's great. That's perfect.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Alexei Ramirez is the most statistically similar player to Starlin Castro with the entire shape of a career.
Huh,
just
yeah.
One of those little things. Len, enjoy.
I hope
you maybe get another walk-off to call you, get the turkey, get three in a row.
We'd love that. Thanks, guys.
That is Len Casper, and I'll probably say hello to him. Maybe he'll come and wave as he's headed to the park tomorrow when we're at Gallagher Way.
Yeah, 9 to noon out there. Lawrence will be there as well. Lawrence is coming up in a little bit, but you, during the break, told me that you found a list.
I've got something cool here, and
right.
I'm going to give you another little. This is a note. Joey Gallo made history. Gallo made history yesterday by becoming the first player in MLB ever to reach 100 career home runs before 100 career singles.
Oh, my God.
Okay. And he blew this record out of the water.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise
me. It's not even close. He hit home run number 100. He's got 93 singles. Now, I'm going to ask you, who are the next five? Who are the five guys that he raced by here?
This is a good list.
This is a good list. And it is a list. There's nobody on this list that you're going to go, oh, no way. It's all like, oh, of course.
Yep.
Fewest singles at the time of their 100th career home run in MLB history. Who are they?
Good list. That's coming up. Bernstein and McKnight, 670, The Score.
You notice this list, huh? I'm always making lists.
This segment's brought to you by Townstone Financial. It's a Townstone Financial mortgage update. Want to fix up your home or pay off credit card debt? Townstone.com has the home loan for you. They guarantee great rates and low costs with the fastest mortgage technology on the planet. Townstone.com, where boom, you are approved, means something. All right, I gave you information.
Uh-huh.
I gave you a quest to find the people that just got their doors blown off by Joey Damn Gallo. Joey Gallo reached 100 career home runs with just 93 singles.
That's unbelievable.
I've got five names here of the guys that had been ahead of him with the fewest singles at the time of their 100th home run.
Okay.
How many can you name?
None of these are going to be old-timey players.
Why?
But I just can't believe that any are going to be old-time. There were so many singles back then and such fewer home run totals.
What is your parameter for old-timey?
Old-timey would be, I would say all of these players have to come from the, I would say like post-85.
No.
Wow. That's striking
to me. There is one who is from, I would say, my childhood.
Okay.
And there's another kind of tweener in there, and then it's more new than not.
Adam Dunn.
Good guess, no.
What?
Not on the list. That was my that was my first guess.
That should be the first guess.
This was presented to me, it was my first guess, and he is not on the list.
Okay.
And just so you know, Joey Gallo with 93 singles, he broke the record by this much, because the guy who had the record had 172 singles at his 100th homer.
Dave Kingman?
Good. That's it. Dave Kingman, fifth at 180.
180?
180.
Oh, okay, so that's not many singles that separate all these guys. It means
right.
They were all right around the same.
Right, they're all bunched together.
But
Dave, nice that you pulled Kingman.
I made a guess at Chris Davis.
No.
Either of them, for that matter?
Neither Chris Davis. Or with a K.
Damn.
No.
Richie Sexson.
Not a bad guess, and it's wrong, however.
How about Kent Herbeck?
No, not Kent Herbeck.
Okay.
Travis Hafner.
No. Pronk. Our guy.
How about a modern era player? I should have looked whether or not this guy had 100 career homers yet. Nah, Jock Peterson probably doesn't have 100. Mm-hmm. Rougned Odor is probably just over 100, but I doubt he's on this list. It took him two seasons to hit 60-something.
One of these guys won an MVP.
And a
World Series. One of these guys.
Ryan Howard.
Yep, Ryan Howard.
Nice.
At 176, he is now fourth all-time. Or fewest
Kingman's five and Howard is four?
No, well, Gallo's first. Kingman is now sixth. So there's three more names you have to get. One is a classic three true outcome guy. One guy's...
Mark Reynolds.
No, another good guess.
Not on the line. Okay.
This guy would be not quite old-timey, more recently than Kingman, but a long time ago, and his name is maybe memorable for a rant on a famous sitcom. Is invoked.
A rant on a it's not Ken Phelps?
Yes, Ken Phelps.
It's Ken Phelps.
Jay Buhner got a rocket for an arm. Ken Phelps at 174.
George is dead. Call me back.
I didn't think we'd invoke the name Ken Phelps.
I didn't think so either. That's okay. Then I'm going to have nothing. I didn't have Ken Phelps on this.
All right. Well, Joey Gallo broke the record of Russell Branyon.
Russell the Muscle Branyon.
Of
course.
Yep.
Canyon Distance Branyon.
Yep.
That's number one. All right, who's the other guy we're missing? We've got Russell Branyon at
Joey
one.
Joey Gallo's first. Joey Gallo. 93 singles when he got to 100 home runs. Russell Branyon, 172. Ken Phelps, 174. Ryan Howard, 176. Dave Kingman at the back end at 180. This guy had 179. Chris Carter.
Oh, he was exiled to Japan for a little while before coming back, right? He led the league led National League in home runs for the Brewers. Had to go to Japan, wait for a while, and then finally got a contract with the Yankees.
I mean, he wasn't exiled. He wasn't sent away there.
You don't know that.
He took a job.
They don't
there.
Publish exile papers anymore.
Yeah, because remember.
A different administration.
As a 29-year-old, you know, big hairy chested slugger of 41 home runs and 206 strikeouts, and he couldn't find a job.
Because power is cheaper than it ever was before.
Because the power is in the baseball.
It's all over the place is where it is. That's a good list.
Isn't it?
Russell the Muscle. That's a good one.
The bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey, and the Chicago Wolves are tied at 2 games apiece with Iowa in the division finals. The Wolves return home Monday night at 7 for Game 6 at Allstate Arena. Tickets start at only $15. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. In Madison, Wisconsin, it is Dave. Dave's on Bernstein and McKnight on the Score. What's up?
Hey, guys. 2 points. The first one, Connor, apparently you don't know this, but you're still on Madison's top 10 list, wanted list up here.
That makes sense.
We don't get a lot of top shelf crime. So your attempted drowning of the woman with wine and mimosas when you were a server in your college days,
yeah,
it's still fair game up here.
That makes sense to me. I have been banned from a particular bar up there where they serve boots of beer. That was all fair as well. I think you can probably find my identification photocopied and put on the back wall there too.
Yeah, and that's the only bar, of course, in Madison that serves beer. So, you know, you probably don't even want to come back up here.
What else on your mind, Ed?
Yeah, at the risk of incurring your wrath, I'd like you to put your number 70 jersey and your Madden glasses on and be Joe Madden and tell me why you pulled Hendricks last night after the 8 dominating innings and only the 96 pitches, considering also, you know, that he only threw the 80 pitches, as we all know, and enjoyed his last time.
Yeah, how Joe explained it, that it was you know, some high stress and a one-run lead, and he was coming up in the next inning to go hit. So I would imagine that was, I think Joe kind of mentioned that was why. If the lead were a little larger, he said he'd let him in and let him start. But Joe also mentioned he was going to pull him had he let up the first base runner of the ninth anyway. So you're kind of felt like you're in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. If those are your parameters, that you're going to pull him after a first base runner in the ninth, you're going to that bullpen maybe one way or the other, and it's a one-run lead.
Hendricks didn't disagree.
Combination of two things. We're looking for some insurance right there. And if he goes out there to pitch and the leadoff hitter gets on, you're going to want to take him out anyway. So you have to balance all those thoughts. He was right at, almost 100 pitches. He's coming off 81. I know that's good, but that's 8 innings. So him leading off, trying to, in a one-run game, had it been more of a cushion, I probably would have let him go back out and hit.
There you go.
There you have it.
You can disagree with it if you want. Let the guy pitch, finish out the game, let him hold the one run lead. But I'll err to Joe on that one. I suppose you have to.
Yeah, and Hendricks, the numbers are really snapping back. This is what you expect it to look like for him, because right now I believe he's lowered his ERA to 3.19, and it's right in line here. His fielder independent pitching is 3.09. His xFIP is 3.83. So looking pretty solid.
And
like he's right at the
did
ship.
You happen to see?
I saw him hit 89. Mm-hmm. It's funny. This is so. I was in the middle of a charity board meeting. And I had my phone on MLB.com.
Oh, they love it when you do that.
Well, there's a lot of Cubs fans in there. They know. Every once in a while, I'm going back and checking over when, you know, we're moving on with management reports or whatever it is. And I look down. I'm like, did I see this right? Because I'm looking at the phone. And I'm like, 88, 88, 89?
Uh-huh.
Thinking, ooh, that's not 86.
Nope.
That's a huge difference for him.
For him, it's, I don't know if it's exponential, but it's pretty damn close. I saw him sit, Brooks Baseball has him sitting at 87.9 yesterday with the fastball and topping out at 89.3 for Kyle Hendricks, which would be a pickup of 2 to 3 miles an hour.
That's big.
And I won't say that that's the only cause. Velocity helps. Joe Sheehan is a champion of this. He tells us every Tuesday that velocity is a big predictor for success. For Hendricks, though, you can see the finish on those changeups over the last two starts as well. Like, it's just you can tell that he's burying that pitch much better than he had in any of his other starts, save for maybe that one against the Diamondbacks, the one that went well, not the one that went up.
A lot of texters here asking, were you banned from Essen House?
Oh, I didn't want to put the name of the bar out there. Yeah, that's where we decided to go for my 21st birthday. And I got to tell you, the Essen House won.
It says, Connor banned from Essen House. That's impressive. No more Essen House. Said it's closing.
No!
Apparently, they're tearing that place down soon.
You're kidding.
Are you allowed to go back into whatever business is built there? Or is there sort of in perpetuity? Within those perimeters, you're not allowed to?
I did sneak back into the Essen House only once, and it was well after I'd graduated, like 4 or 5 years afterward. I needed to see if I could get in there. I could not find my ID pinned up to the back of the bar as I know it was.
You got permanently banned.
Yeah,
from
I deserved
a
it too.
Sandwich.
I deserved it. I behaved like a 21-year-old.
Oh, yeah, it was nice.
He wasn't even drunk. They were just annoyed with the way he pronounced everything.
It's raccoon.
The Assinhaus. I'm very happy to be at the Assinhaus. Yeah. It's wonderful to be here tonight. No, I did behave like a 21-year-old. That was a foolish, foolish evening.
Yeah, I have stories too. The texters earlier that were responding to our story about Denver and psilocybin mushrooms and a story maybe kind of that might have happened in Chapel Hill.
Maybe.
Asking, was I tripping when I saw the pig-faced man in Jacksonville? No, he actually is the pig-faced man.
There was a pig-faced man in Jacksonville?
Yeah, he was a David Lamb.
Oh.
And he was a longtime columnist and like radio guy there, and he had the stub of a cigar that he would tuck into the side of his mouth. I thought you were going to say
stub of face.
No, it was and Terry and I, his face was stuffed. And he was doing his show where we were sitting, where the score table was, and we were at the Super Bowl down there, and Terry's like, oh, there's your buddy, the pig face man. I'm like, don't say it out loud. Like I can say the quiet part out loud again. It's like when you're at the gym and you know you have your names for different people.
Oh, for everybody.
Right, where
everybody gets a name at the gym.
Yeah, there's Hum to Himself guy. There's Garlic Man. There's I'm sure people have a nickname. Probably old guy with the dumbbells, or whatever. But I said, Terry, look at that guy. He's like, oh yeah, the big face man. Hey over there, hey big face. Like, no, you don't say it to him. he just like doesn't get it. He doesn't think of it. It's just that's how
Terry met his ancestors in the 17th century.
Got in a fight with the sports animal guy. And Terry called him a D-bag, on the air or something.
That sounds right.
He was the big dog, and then he got all mad, and then Terry like, come over here, you dumbass bastard, something. Oh, there's your buddy, the pig-faced man. And he looks at him like, what, me? Like, come on, man. What are you doing? Hey, you want to win $1,000?
I do.
Well, you can't.
Well, that sucks.
But somebody can.
That's good.
Because if you're listening, you're going to get a keyword, and then you're going to text it in, and you might win $1,000. The keyword belongs to you next on The Score. It's that time. Your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is roof. Text roof to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is roof. Or maybe as a Midwesterner, you say roof. 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Our thank yous today go to Tim Anderson and Len Casper for joining us. Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, Ray Diaz, the producers, Brian Kirch, the video feed. Tomorrow, we have a full show for you at Gallagher Way at Wrigley Field. I think it'll be a little warmer than it was the last time we were there.
Probably couldn't be colder.
I don't know if our guy Reading Vonnegut is going to show up. The ultimate Bernstein.
Resplendent in a blazer and boat shoes cheaters.
You could if you had designed in a laboratory. Like the on-brand Bernstein and McKnight guy, just sit there at the remote while reading Kurt Vonnegut and listening to the show.
It was like, actually painful to look at. It was like looking in the mirror, and it's a funhouse mirror, but you also know that, oh, that's Puppy, that's you.
We have met the
that
enemy.
That is you.
And it is us. Sahat Afsharm is going to join us tomorrow. Our rescheduled interview with Sam Fuld. Jonah Carey is going to join us, as he usually does, and we'll have surprises from the ballpark, too. So it's going to be all kinds of fun stuff at our Xfinity broadcast at Gallagher Way. Lawrence Holmes says hello next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.